Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Vineyards of Champagne by Juliet Blackwell, narrated by Exie Sands. In losing you, I lost my sun and moon and all the stars that blessed my lonely night. I lost the master word, dear love, the clue that threads the maze of life. When I lost you, Winifred Lutz. Lucy, France, France, 1916. The clicking of my mother's knitting needles is the metronome measuring the minutes, hours, months spent in the perpetually cool, dim caves. The sound reverberates off the chalk walls. When there comes a pause in the shelling, the able-bodied dare to slip out into the above-ground world, to feel the sun on our faces, to breathe deeply of the air. However rank with smoke, it is better than the stale air within the caves, and to tend to the wounded. We comb through the charred ruins of our once beautiful city for anything of use. An unbroken teacup, a child's toy, ripped blankets, or sweaters that can be unraveled for their wool. My mother's hands were once soft from a lifetime of ease. Now, those same hands reclaim old misshapen sweaters with an avarice that astonishes me, unraveling the yarn, winding it into a hank, soaking it in water to relax the crimp of the stitches, sometimes even dyeing it pale yellow with onion skins, or grayish purple with discarded grape musts. Before, my mother taught me how to sit with my knees together, how to move gracefully, and when to smile. Those skills have no place in the caves. But another lesson I have learned from my mother. Yarn remains fundamentally unchanged, no matter its pattern. It is still wool. It might be singed, abandoned, stripped from a corpse. It might be unraveled altogether, a twisted, knotted rat's nest of fibers. But it can be cleansed and untangled and knitted back together again. It can take a new form. The shape may be different, but the wool is fundamentally the same. The human spirit does not want to die. It is a resilient thing. That first year of the war, without any hale young men, without the aid of decent horses or farm equipment, and with German bullets and shells raining down from the hills, we made up our minds to bring in the harvest. That first year, and the second, and the one after that, every September when the heat of summer begins to cede to the chill of autumn, when the cellar master declares the fruit has reached its pinnacle of sweetness, we venture out under cover of darkness to pick the grapes. We hold them below ground, capture their juices, and lay the bottles to rest in the cool, dank caves. We bring in the harvest, knowing that our beloved champagne will be drinkable only long after the war is over, a victory vintage, to be savored in celebration of the end of war. Women, children, the elderly, we bring in the harvest. We make the wine.
Chapter 1. Napa, California, present day.
There's one major problem with your little plan, said Rosalind, patting the dossier Q had dropped on the desk in front of her. According to the itinerary, she was booked on an Air France flight to Paris, departing from San Francisco the day after Christmas. She was to stay a couple of nights in Paris, then pick up a rental car that had been reserved in her name and head for Champagne, less than a two-hour drive northeast.
What problem? I booked it myself.
Hugh nodded and gave her an exaggerated wink.
First class, that's the ticket. Get it? The ticket.
But I don't like France, or the French, or Champagne, for that matter.
Are you saying you dislike la Champagne, as in the region of France? Asked Hugh. Or le Champagne, the bubbly nectar that is celebrated the world over?
Both, as you very well know.
Not a fan.
Hugh's only reaction to her ill humor was a broad smile. Rosalind's boss was a bear of a man who dwarfed the cramped winery import office located in the lovingly renovated garage of his sprawling Napa Valley vineyard home. Standing several inches tall,